earth, and sky.
Chocolate is really a passionate food, and everyone is deeply moved one way or the other by it. And the point is, I think a lot of people don't realize where it comes from and the amount of work and effort that goes into producing that chocolate that they're eating.
You're listening to plant pathologist Lyndall Meinhardt, who works for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Meinhardt spoke to Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl about cacao, the tropical crop used to produce chocolate. He said cacao is very susceptible to disease, which can make it a risky crop for farmers to grow. That's one reason he and his colleagues have been looking for unknown varieties of cacao in the wild places of South America.
So from a scientific perspective then, what's so unique about the cacao crop?
Scientifically, it's a great crop to work with. It's a really nice tree. It's got a lot of diseases and pest problems, so it's really interesting to work with. And it's also very complicated in that it's been around for a long time. The Aztecs, the Olmecs, the Mayans were using this as far back as we can tell in the Central America. And we still are basically, a lot of places have not changed how we're growing it. It's basically a hunter-gatherer sort of plant that we put it out there in the forest and we go pick it when it's ripe.
That's interesting. I mean, my impression was actually that there were cacao plantations, but it seems like you're talking about more about wild harvesting?
No, not so much, because you look at it, the majority of the cacao that's produced, it's produced on small 1 to 2 hectare plots around the world. There's between 5 and 6 million cacao farmers around the world. There's only a few areas in the world where they're still producing it or have tried to produce it as a plantation crop. And those have... And Brazil was one of the main ones, and that really fell apart in 1989 when one of the major diseases that we work with came in and basically cut their production by three-fourths. So they basically went from 400,000 tons of production all the way down to 100,000 tons.
If my information is correct, you are hunting for wild species of cacao?
We're looking at the upper tributaries of the Amazon, that's correct. We're on the Maranhão River, as far up in toward the Andes in Peru, and then a number of the tributaries in through there.
Is cacao in the wild somehow less susceptible to illness, though?
They have a lot of disease problems, such as witch's broom, which is a very devastating disease, the one that entered into Brazil. And they have another disease, which is called frosty pod, that attacks the pods. So what we're doing by going to those regions, we're looking for trees that show no symptoms or no signs of the disease, or they have a large production with the disease components. So we're trying to get those sampled and get those into a collection so we can then do further evaluation and see if it's true what we see in the wild. That material can then be utilized by those nations or by international groups to try to work toward improving the existing varieties of cacao.
You know, witch's broom and frosty pod, those just sound completely wild, right? It's so dramatic, and so I want to ask you about that. What actually happens?
Okay, with witch's broom, for example, this forms on the outer branches, on the tips of the, it infects the tips of the trees, and will form kind of a thick, it's a fungus that invades, and it'll go into the tissue, but will not cause the death of the tissue. What it does, it starts transforming the tissue, and the tissue will swell, and it will start putting out lots of little shoots. So basically, the end of the branch will look basically like a broom, and they call it a green broom. And it'll look like, it just pops up from nowhere, so it was called a witch's broom. And this broom formation is typical of a number of viral diseases and some other fungal diseases, but this is actual fungus that causes this. And it'll grow, and it'll have all these branches coming out for up to 6 weeks or so, and then it'll just all of a sudden die. And then you have all these dry ends of the branches with lots of just hanging on the trees because they don't fall off. And then after several cycles of wetting and drying, small mushrooms, pinkish, brownish sort of mushrooms, will come up on this dry material and will produce lots of spores. And that's for the next cycle of disease.
When you take your wild cacao pods back to the lab, Is that what you're taking back to the lab?
What we were actually bringing back from the field was actually cuttings or the ability to do grafts. So we were actually taking a clone or a branch or something from the original tree and taking it back and cloning that. So we have a very close, it's not like it, in the previous expeditions back in the 30s and before, they were unable to collect living material and take it back and graft it. So they had to take seeds and pods, and they had to get those back and get them planted very quickly. But with this expedition, we were actually taking living material from the trees and getting it back to a central location where we could graft it onto existing trees. And so we have a true representation of the tree that we've, or an exact representation of the tree that we found in the wild.
And what do you do, what kind of genetic testing do you do to see if it's the kind of tree that you want?
We have a set of DNA markers similar to what you might use in forensics medicine, where they can actually identify individuals in the population. And we have similar markers for the trees. So we can go back and we can look and see, does this have a unique profile of DNA pattern that makes it unique to population, or is it a sister, or is it related to a population that we already know?
And if it's unique, then what happens?
If it's unique, then that gives us the idea or the possibility that this is something truly new. And so we need to spend more time evaluating it. We need to look at it in a lot more depth. If it's related to something that's already known, then we need to see, does it have any unique properties?
And when you say unique properties, you mean resistance, you mean flavor, you mean all this kind of thing.
Exactly. This last trip was very, we did a very good trip. I believe we collected from around 190 trees and from seven different river systems, which is one of the largest collection expeditions that's been done so far that we know of.
If there is one thing that you could tell our Earth Sky listeners about your research, something that you'd like to be their takeaway, I would love for you to share that.
I mean, it's always easy to go to the store and pick up a chocolate bar, but the point is that supply is not always safe. I mean, there's a lot of threats out there that could severely impact that, the availability of that chocolate. So the take-home message is be aware of where your food comes from and look at the problems that exist there, because there's a lot of us working to try to keep that safe, and we don't always get the I guess the appreciation, but the point is we're there and we're working for the consumers and the taxpayers.
You've been listening to Lyndall Meinhardt, an expert on cacao, the plant that gives us chocolate. Meinhardt's with the Agricultural Research Service, a division of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.